Okay, I think we're going to go ahead and get started again. If everyone could make sure that your cell phones are on silent, that would be great. Welcome. We're going to go ahead. My name is Jenity Johnson. I'm an assistant general counsel at PECO Energy Company, and I'll be your MC for today. As the mother of three future female leaders in this, Philadelphia and Pennsylvania, I'm thrilled to be here to support the advancement of women in the Commonwealth. PECO has a long history of championing women by supporting community efforts that benefit women and girls, including STEM educational programs through partnerships with organizations like the Girl Scouts of Southeastern Pennsylvania and Women's Way, and in workforce development efforts with Career Wardrobe. In fact, PECO was named a best employer for women by Forbes. We are a proud partner of the Pennsylvania Conference for Women. Thank you all for coming and participating in this breakout session, Finding and Engaging Male Allies. We have an amazing hour in store for you, and I'm excited to introduce our thought leader for the session, David Smith. David's a former naval pilot who trained in the military in military sociology and social psychology. He's an associate professor at the United States Naval War College and the co-author of Athena Rising, How and Why Men Should Mentor Women. So welcome, David.
Thank you. So thanks for choosing to come back. That's what I always tell my students. Thanks for choosing to come back this afternoon and to stick with it out here today. Good afternoon and welcome to this panel on engaging male allies. A little smaller audience at the encore than we had this morning. The good news is that means more of you will get a chance to ask questions, hopefully, at the end. We just ran out of so much time this morning. So my job here today is to moderate this. I want to start by contextualizing this a little bit with some of the work that I've done, and then I want to turn it over to this incredible panel of superstars up here with corporate experience, and so you can hear from them, their experiences out there. But first, we need to talk about why this is important. Why are we talking about allyship broadly, and why is it important that we engage in this work and focus on this to solve gender inequities in the workplace? And despite the fact that we have 10,000 women here today at this great conference and these great gatherings, there are still a lot of gender inequities and harmful practices that are going on in the workplace, as you well know, harmful to women, but also harmful to businesses and to men. So I think it's important that we focus on the broader idea here in particular. One of the challenges we have is that because these gender inequities often get labeled as women's issues or women's leadership issues in particular, men often look at this and go, not my problem, so I'm not going to engage in that, so it's not an issue for me. But these are leadership issues. These are business issues, right? So all the stakeholders, all the leaders, including men, need to have an equal stake in this conversation, and that's part of why we're here today. One of the challenges is that we know the research clearly shows that when men engage in diversity initiatives, including gender initiatives out there, that it makes a significant difference in the positive outcomes that we find in businesses. And so the research is already showing this today. So when men are involved, and it's not because somehow men are better in some way, it's because they tend to be in these positions of power and influence, and they can ensure that it happens. But we still have a disconnect there in the way that men perceive the challenges that are going on in the workplace. So the research shows that if you ask men about, hey, are women experiencing bias and discrimination? Is there really a gender pay gap out there? Do women have the same opportunities as men in the workplace? Their thought is that, yeah, there really isn't that much bias out there. There really isn't that much discrimination. And women really do have the same opportunity as men. But the reality is that when we ask the women in this room and other places, that I ask you those same questions, we get a very different answer. So we have a gap, we have a disconnect, and so that's what we're here to begin to address. One of the challenges is for men is they feel this way because it's not because they don't care. Maybe some don't care, but most of them do care, and I think you're going to hear that today. But they don't know what to do, or they just don't see the problem, right? And I like to liken this to the metaphor of us being in an ocean, and here we are fish swimming around in the ocean, and as guys, it's like, you know, the water's really comfy and warm, and I'm very comfortable here. But for other fish, the water's really toxic, right? And this is for women and women of color, and again, other underrepresented minorities in the workplace. it is really toxic, and the men just don't see that in many cases. And one of the things that we know is it's hard to fix something if you can't see it. So disrupting the status quo of calling it out, and we'll talk about some of these issues as we go through this today, I think is part of that. The other thing that I think we have to recognize and just put up front here is that in the post-Me Too workplace, that, again, the research shows that male managers are less comfortable when it comes to mentoring and sponsoring and having lunches or just conversing with women in the workplace. And the same thing goes for senior corporate leaders and doing the same work out there, that there's an anxiety and a fear around having relationships with women in the workplace today. I think that in particular we have to just start to call that out and remind ourselves, and I do this with, again, male audiences in particular, that remembering that Me Too is fundamentally about women asking and demanding to be able to come to work and not be harassed or assaulted. I think it's a really low bar. We could do a lot better than that, right? And that it also, there's this perpetuation of these false narratives in the workplace that somehow women are somehow scary and dangerous, and that we as guys should be fearing this. And we call this gynophobia, by the way. An abnormal fear of women is gynophobia, and guys have this, right? But we have to push back, right? And we have to push back on these narratives. And the last one I would say is the false narrative of fact that the men often continue to perpetuate the fact that they think that the women are going to make these false claims about harassment in the workplace. And they, oh yeah, it's rampant and it's going to happen. And so if you put yourself in this situation, it's going to happen to you. Sorry, guys. Nope, it doesn't exist. The evidence is not there. Yes, you might have an anecdote of somewhere that might have happened, but the evidence does not show that this is happening in any abnormal way. And oh, by the way, you're probably, if you're just an average guy out there, well-meaning and doing the right things, and not a serial harasser or perpetrator, you're probably more likely to get struck by lightning than be falsely accused of sexual harassment. So just watch out for those thunderstorms out there. The truth of it is that if you're a well-meaning, well-intentioned, imperfect dude, kind of like me, you know, we're going to make mistakes. We're going to step in it once in a while. But the fact is that if we approach this, that we have good intentions and that we are trying to make the workplace better, and if we, the more aware we are and the more educated we are and the more understanding we are of the problems that are going on, the more likely we are to be motivated to work and to fix that. So what's it mean to be a male ally? We're going to use that term here today. And I would tell you that we just recently finished our research, my co-author Brad Johnson and I, looking at how men and women partner in the workplace to change the workplace as allies. Think about it as gender partners, gender allies in the workplace. And what we found in our forthcoming book next year is that there's really kind of two parts to this, and it's kind of common sense. There's one is an individual piece, and that's how we show up as men, in particular how we show up as allies in the workplace in terms of supporting women and being in collaborative and personal relationships with women in the workplace and holding ourselves accountable for our own individual behavior and language. The other part's the public piece, and that's calling things out, advocating on the same way for women that we do for men, and making sure that we're addressing some of the systemic challenges and problems we have in the workplace, and we're not just allowing those things to go, but we have to publicly call that out. So there's two parts to that, and it's not always necessarily an easy part to do the public part of it. The most important part about this in particular is we look at the development of allies and think about this as we're on a journey, a leadership journey or whatever you want to call it, that we go through stages and we're all in different places along this journey, and we kind of need to meet people where they are. But the one thing we do know is that there are three kind of basic motivations that men have about doing this work around allyship. And that's one, sometimes it's a character trait. We think about it in terms of being altruistic or being in touch with social justice initiatives and challenges out there. The other part of it's a business case. And again, we know that, and it's great having a couple people up here today who are focused on innovation, because the more gender diverse your leadership teams are, guess what? The more innovative your organizations are, the more creative they are, the better decisions that they make, the more profitable they are. And the evidence continues to pile up across industries about this out there. So the business case is really compelling too, but at the end of the day, we have to get in touch with people's sense of justice and fairness. And some of that takes a personal connection. And so finding that personal connection, it might be to a family member, a wife, a daughter, a mother, right? Of understanding that experience of how they relate that to you and going, wow, that is wrong. That should not happen to you. And I can't allow that to happen. And I've got to go out there and make that right for everyone. Get you in touch with that sense of fairness. Or it could be a female colleague or a mentor, maybe a female mentor in some cases. So finding that personal motivation and getting in touch with that is really important as we think about doing this. One of the really important parts as we move forward on that is developing awareness, because we have to understand the system that we're in and seeing it. And it takes conversation. It takes learning. It takes being in an environment like this and thinking about, as guys, how do we show up at a conference like this for women? And by the way, thank you guys for being out there in the audience today, a few of you unicorns like me. And figuring out, if it's your first time walking into a space like this, what's my role? How should I act? Is it any different? Should I even open my mouth here, or should I just be listening, learning, and being quiet the whole time? Yes, you should. And asking questions probably is another good thing. And at the end of the day, asking, maybe going back to your female colleagues at work and saying, hey, I just had this experience at the women's conference, and here's what I learned, and gosh, you know, how can I help? How can I be more supportive and collaborative and helping to make things better here for all of us? And I think that's a great way to think about how we do that. It's interesting, but guys are reluctant in a variety of different ways to engage in being allies. And we wrote about this in our first book on Athena Rising, on how and why men should mentor women, about why do men avoid, even in the pre-Me Too world, why did men avoid interacting with women in a professional developmental relationship like a mentorship? And it tends to go back to, again, your gynophobia. It's your anxieties and fears about making mistakes or offending somebody. We're worried about perceptions about what people might think or say if I'm mentoring a junior woman in that case. You might even be worried about what your spouse, for many men talk to us about how they're concerned that their spouses wouldn't understand them spending a lot of time with a junior woman at work. And so there, you get that reluctance. And the other part of it's a perception piece. And that is that sometimes men look at women in a way that, oh, she's a risky investment. She's just not leader material. She can't cut it. She's not tough enough. She's a ticking time bomb of maternity. A guy told me that. his quote. That she's going to suddenly start popping out babies. And women look at him like, yeah, but I'm not even married or even thinking about kids. I don't even want kids right now. But it's interesting. These things come out. These perceptions are real, and they're out there. So we have to address them. The last couple pieces I'd like to remind about is thinking about the confronting and holding ourselves individually accountable for our own language and behavior. But we also have to do the public piece of confronting others. And sometimes as men, even us confronting other men can be really challenging and scary to some extent about how we're going to do that. But we have to have the courage to do that. And when we do it, for a guy confronting another man in an audience and there happens to be a woman in there, you can't say, oh, hey, you can't say that. That's wrong. You know, Romy's right here. Like, no, that doesn't, no, you can't do that. You have to say, you have to own it. It has to be yours, and you have to, again, I'm offended or it's wrong because of this, because of what I believe, not necessarily because Romy happens to be sitting here next to me, right? So owning it and confronting it, I think, is part of the challenge with the public piece of it. The other part of it is that you have to expect and ask for, from your female colleagues especially, but also other men, feedback, right? So when I don't get it quite right, that you explain that to me. And I'm asking for the feedback. And that's why it's important to have, again, cross-gender friendships and relationships in the workplace, so that you can have the trusted colleague who can come to you and go, you know, when you said this, it just didn't quite land the way I think you meant it to land. And trust me, we've all had that happen to us in one way or another. And it's nice. That's a gift, right? To have somebody who cares enough, as opposed to today what Liz told us, right? I don't care. I do care enough to give you feedback. So when you do care and you give them the feedback, you know that somebody cares, right? And one woman even called it carefrontation instead of confrontation. And I know, I loved it. It was just like he cared enough to give me the feedback. So confronting in a caring way is really important. So we have to also be ready to respond to that and think about it. As men, think about, all right, so when Romy tells me, gives me that feedback, I have to say, thank you. I really appreciate that. That's something I'm trying to work on. I'm trying to get better. I'm going to go back and think about that and be all right, maybe even if I follow up with you, to ask you some more, right? And so understanding and being grateful for the feedback that you're receiving out there. The last part is around the public piece and confronting. There's a lot of opportunities to do this in places like meetings, and as we have to, again, as men, be aware of the things that don't happen to us, but they happen to women. And everything from having your idea bro-procreated to being man-interrupted to not getting equal airtime to not getting a seat at the table, not being included, getting too much office housework, being stepped on, whatever the case might be, the host of things that happen, right? And as men, if it happens to us, we don't even notice it happening, right? We have to become aware of that and call it out in an important way. And then we have to do this at the organizational level. We have to hold each other, our leaders, accountable for doing these things, right? And we have to think about the processes. This is the systemic issues about how we recruit, how we hire, and who's included on those teams when we do the hiring and recruiting. Are we representing our organization in a way that feels inclusive and looks inclusive? Same thing when you walk around your spaces. In the public spaces of your organization, you have pictures up. Who are they pictures of? I guarantee if you go into most of my spaces where when I was in the military, it's a bunch of old white dudes. And most of the women there would look around and go like, you know, could you at least put one picture of a woman up somewhere in here? So we feel like we're part of the team as well, and that's important. The other thing is you have to advocate on behalf of things that maybe don't even affect you. So as a guy who my kids have grown and left the nest and gone on, I still have to advocate for parental leave. I have to be an advocate for that because it's not because it's important to me, but it's important for the people I work with, right? And maybe the people who work for me, the people who are going to come behind me and after that. Same thing with flex time, returnships, you name it, all these different programs that maybe don't affect you, but they affect others out there. And that's the public advocacy piece for everyone, not just for yourself and what's important to you. The last thing I'll leave you with, and I want to get going with the rest of the panel, is that gender equity starts at home. Cannot happen unless we start at home. So we have to go home and figure out how we're going to be equal 50-50 partners at home. Guys, do the dishes. Take your kids to childcare. Take them to the doctor. Do the emotional labor part of it too, not just the physical labor. Make sure that you're planning vacations, you're planning meals, you're thinking about all those different birthdays and everything that, again, tends to fall on women in the household. If we can't be equal partners at home, it's never going to happen at work. You got to be a public walk the talk at home and walk it back at work at the same time. If you're not sure if you're a 50-50 partner at home, ask her. Get an audit. You know what? And when she gives you the real honest feedback, you got to own it. You got to believe it and then go make the change. You know, go live it and show that you heard it and you're doing something about it out there. So anyway, we have to walk the talk at work and home. With that, I want to get into the panel discussion. We have a great, great set of panelists up here today with a lot of experience. And so first, I'll introduce our panelists, and then we'll get into the conversation. So first, we have Romy Newman, and she's the co-founder and CEO of Fairy God Boss. And I encourage you to go look that up on, if you haven't seen Fairy God Boss on the website, their website, go look it up. A great, great site for advancing women in a host of different ways out there. And then we have Dr. Mary Beth Harler from Bristol-Myers Squibb and head of innovation, medical innovation there. And then finally we have Jess Turner, and Jess is executive vice president at USA MasterCard. So a wealth of different experience, different industries up here. And so think about your questions when it comes time, and we'll go from there. So with that, I'd like to start with Romy, the first question there. And with Fairy God Boss, you've done a lot of proprietary research in particular around this topic on male allies. And so could you give us a quick summary of what you found and kind of the important highlights of that?
Yes, I will do that. But before I do, I actually wanted to refer everybody to a third-party statistic that I like to cite at events like this because I think it's something essential to lay out on the table. And it comes from the World Economic Forum. And according to their research, at our current pace of progress, it will take us over 200 years to achieve gender parity in the workplace. Yeah. It's untenable, it's unacceptable, and it's pretty depressing. So when I think about that, to me, that is a burning platform. It means that we have to rapidly accelerate our pace of progress, and it means that we have to be radical in our approach. Incremental is not going to make the difference. And so I think that's extremely relevant to this conversation here today, because you can be certain we will not accelerate progress enough if it's only women involved in the efforts. So that's part of it. And then something that you spoke about, Dave, is that the motivation has to be there. The reason for why men and women should be working together on this, and I'm also a big believer that, because for those of us who do work in corporations, corporations exist to drive shareholder value. The burning platform has to adhere to this idea that gender equality, greater diversity of all kinds, and especially gender diversity, will drive better stock performance, right? Will drive better shareholder returns. And that is demonstrated by sources like McKinsey and sources like Morgan Stanley. So I think once you lay that out on the table, then you can begin to connect on how men and women can and should and must work together to advance both the goals of the company and then also this little thing called human rights. So all that said, I'm now going to come back to the study. So where are we on that path now? So the study that we fielded among men in the workplace, 88% responded that they consider themselves male allies or they want to be male allies. But of those 88%, 56% said, I don't know how. And so I think that cuts right to the core of the issue, which is that we have to figure out how to enable and empower men to work in the service of accelerating this gender diversity. And I think it comes down to candid, courageous conversations, opening the dialogue, being clear about expectations, being clear about what we want, being clear about where we're feeling there's not equity, being clear about everything we see. From the male perspective, I think it's about opening the lines of communication and saying, hey, I want to be an ally to you. So tell me what to do. Tell me how I can help you. If you see something that's not right, you can tell me. You can trust me. I'm in this with you. And let's collaborate on this together. And it will serve us both well, because our team will have better performance or our company will have better performance.
So where do we start? I heard you're 88%, and of course my mind went to the other side, the 12%. What about that 12% group? But I'm not going to make any assumptions that they're either senior or junior, but should we be starting with the senior leadership, or do we start with the junior incoming cohort of men coming in?
Yeah, it has to be with the senior leadership, because what the senior leadership does will be followed by the junior ranks. But I think, you know, one of the things that we could do to accelerate that timeline most rapidly would be for companies to place a much greater value on men who genuinely work as allies. And I point to Microsoft actually has a practice where incentive compensation, so bonuses of executives, is based on one component of it is how diverse your team is. So that's how strongly they are encouraging managers to drive diversity. And I think when corporations can create focus like that, it will drive change. And I think you also have to start with the senior ranks, because let's face it, that's where the clout is. And let's face it, that's where women are dramatically underrepresented. I think you may have also seen this statistic that there are more CEOs in the Fortune 500 named Jeffrey than there are women. So we're going to need to enlist the help of senior male allies to set the tone, to create value and reward around being a male ally.
Great. Thank you. Jess, I'd like to throw one down to you at this point. Can you talk a little bit about some of the male allies that you've encountered in your career at this point, and how have you engaged them? How do you continue to build strong connections with them?
You know, it's a great question, and I've never actually thought of them as male allies until we really started to think about it. I've just thought of them as people. But what I'll tell you is I reached out to a few that I still have the opportunity to work with, and I asked them. I said, so tell me, what makes you want to be a male ally? And you kind of sparked it, the thought, and they said, what are you talking about? And it was an interesting insight for me. because my current boss, whose leadership team, he runs all of North America for MasterCard and reports to our CEO, Ajay. His leadership team is over 60% female, and it's a very senior team within MasterCard. I'm on it. I consider ourselves the highest talent team in the company. You can all write that down. And I asked him the question, and he said, you know, I don't think of myself that way, but I will tell you this. I think about the way I look at resumes, and I look at people. And I don't look for people who have multiple years of experience doing the same thing. I look at what I need my company to be. I look at the skill sets, the thinking, the mindsets, the way they behave with people, and how I'm going to win. And I think if you're looking at a resume and you keep trying to hire the same person at this level, you could have an unconscious bias because you could be hiring that person from 10 years ago. And he said, so I don't think I've considered myself a male ally. I've considered myself someone who's trying to drive my business and support the people around me. And I thought it was very insightful. And another quick point I had, I've also had the opportunity to work for our CTO, Ed McLaughlin. And I asked him the same, and I worked for him much younger in my career. And he said, first he made a joke about it. I said, are you a male ally? And he said, I'm an ally to everybody who's willing to work in technology. And then he said, I believe, he actually has many daughters, and he said, I believe that looking at people and knowing who they are and wanting their development, if you truly understand them, you become a male ally by accident. Because you are actually endorsing and pushing for things that maybe don't have any impact for you. You're just trying to develop your people for what matters for them. And that runs across all diversity. So I've been very fortunate, very, very fortunate. And the World Economic Forum is something we actually talk about a ton at MasterCard, because we have a vice chairman, Ann Carnes, who recently became our vice chairman, and that's what she does for MasterCard now. And in the U.S., I think we have a long way to go, but we're in a much better situation. And so when you go to other parts of the world, MasterCard's very global. It is very different. It is very different. And I think because of that and the vision for that, we have more male allies at MasterCard because we roll up into the center and we're a U.S.-based company. And so that's what I got back from them. So I thought I would share that with you. Very long-winded answer, but I'm going to give you one other opposing part, which is I work with somebody else who I very much respect, and I think he's a very genuine person. And I do think he has a minor unconscious bias, but I don't believe he wants it. And back to your difficult conversation, I noticed a trend that when I would disagree with him, he would say things like, don't make this your religion. Don't be emotional about this. And so I said to him, every time I disagree with you, you tell me it's emotional. In fact, it's not. I started as a statistician. If you want data, you should come right here. I said, it's because I don't agree with you, and I don't think you mean to do it, but you need to stop. And he appreciated the feedback, because I don't think it was intentional, and he's a very good person, but I do think it's back to being able to help both ways, because we're not perfect either. I mean, we're close, but...
But you can see how that would be a lot more challenging, right, if it's a boss where maybe you're not as close and
it was actually my boss at the time. Yeah. I think you have to be a little risky. If you really want to make this work, if you want to have this better progression, we have to put ourselves out there a little bit and try to do it in a respectful way.
And I think the workforce has changed to a point where there is a lot more kind of 360-degree feedback, and it is which I think will help with this progress. There is much more of an accepted practice to say, hey, what's your working style? Or talk to me about what's working for you and not, which is important to feed all kinds of diversity, right? Because the less everyone at the company is a cookie cutter, the more we have to adapt for different standards and expectations.
That's exactly right.
So beyond, I think I heard some of the business, maybe the business case reasons why some of the men engaged in that. Was there anything else, any other reasons why? Did they share any other reasons why they felt like it was important for them to do this kind of work?
So, I mean, I think most of the leaders at MasterCard, MasterCard's not a big company. People think we're huge. We're 15,000 people around the world, and like 6,000 of its acquisitions. And I just share that with you because to have a leadership role at MasterCard, the bar is pretty high. And focusing on diversity across the board, not just gender diversity, is who we are at our core. And so the leaders at MasterCard spend a lot of time caring about that. We talk about a lot of different things. We've put a lot of things into practice for gender diversity. We do, you know, Girls Who Code. We do the relaunch program where you can come back after you've taken some time on maternity leave, and many, many other things internally as well. But we do lots of other things. So it's important inclusively for us. Our CEO, Ajay Banga, is a different type of CEO for the United States, for a U.S.-based company. And because of that, the focus of diversity across the board has been massive. And so they do it for the business reasons. They do it because they know different thinking enables true innovation. It also enables a lot more happiness at work. And we actually are also, we don't have a bonus structure quite like Microsoft, but at the end of every year, we absolutely are gauged on what we call diverse thinking of our team. So we don't do it based on diversity stats, we monitor it. And ours are very good and very public, but we do talk about, when we talk about leaders, like what's the diversity of the thinking of their team. And so they do it for all of those reasons.
Great. So Dr. Harler, I wanted to come back to you in particular, because bringing in a different perspective, maybe from again, your profession, but as a surgeon, right, how have male allies benefited you in your career?
So the word is overused, but journey, right, is very, very apt. And given that the focus of our conversation today is really on male allies, as I reflected back on the experience that I've had, right, you know, there have been segments of my life and actual inflection points. And at key inflection points, there are specific male mentors, advisors, what I would now call an ally, who had substantial influence on my thinking and my decision making. The first actually was when I was in medical school. And the chairman of the Department of Surgery, right, kind of looked at me, you know, a hungry med student, right? I was in the operating room with him around 3 a.m. We were preparing to operate on a diabetic with a very sick foot. And he looked at me, he saw the interest, and you know what? He handed me the scalpel. He drew a line on the patient's foot where the infection was located, and he said, "Cut there." And I fell in love. Okay? So he became my mentor, right, for a period of time, certainly through medical school. I then went on to train as a general surgeon, but had the extraordinary opportunity to do a research fellowship and entered the lab and fell in love again, this time around asking really big questions, right? Right? The kinds of questions that, honestly, one can't fix with a scalpel or sutures, right? It's going to require a much deeper understanding of what actually drives biological processes and disease. And my mentor at that time was a PhD. And again, another inflection point, because I had visions of myself at that time of becoming a straight-on academic surgeon. In the lab with my grants, no marriage, no kids, no nothing, right? Lab. This guy, he forced me to think bigger. He made sure that I was reading books on philosophy, right? He was not only training me to think critically as a scientist, but he was making sure that the humanity, right, that was really required for full thinking was also being developed, right? Long story short, I got married, had three kids, right? Best thing that ever happened to me. But fast forward, my career has evolved significantly since that time. And, you know, at this point in my career, right, I think my peers up here on the stage have touched upon many themes that resonate deeply with me. Words like partnership, right? This is a human issue. This is not a female or male issue. This is a human issue, right? And the outcomes we strive for are common to all of us, right? You know, we talk about it in terms of business success, or in the quality of a product. But in truth, right, those outcomes are really not achievable on a sustainable basis without all of us at the table. So I have the benefit at this point in time of a number of male partners, right? And we agree very openly to be trusted peers to one another. Right, just as David was indicating, right? I get that feedback from a couple of my male partners, right? When I don't land something well, oh, they're gonna tell me right fast, okay? And likewise, I share that feedback with them. We view this as an obligation to one another in helping our people succeed. That's what this is about. So yeah, I hope you're feeling the passion that I have around this. It's truly sincere. I've learned a lot.
Wow. I love the story there, and I'm going to come back to that in just a minute. I wanted to follow up with Jess real quick on with MasterCard. I think maybe one of our previous conversations we talked about how you have particular initiatives at MasterCard, maybe that are pushing forward, encouraging men as allies in particular to move forward on diversity and inclusion initiatives. Can you share any of that?
It's a great point, actually, and I think it actually hits on the research I heard you go through. It is true. I think what we realized amongst internally was that men wanted to be quote-unquote allies, and they really didn't know what to do. And so we came up and we said, well, first of all, we should probably be proactively inviting them to these things because it is a human issue. And we did that. And at one point, they outranked the women who appeared. And so these initiatives we have is that there are male sponsors of women leadership networks across the world for us because they volunteer for it. We have an executive women's program that I cannot remember the name of and I just went through, but we're going to call it Executive Woman Now for right now. And it's around the globe, and our board members come to talk to the women. Our senior executives come and talk to them, and it is a major part of what we're doing. And we have a very global board, and our executives all around the world, and they travel through and they travel in to do that. On top of that, we have a lot of programs that our millennials run around, and we have most of those circles have men, heavy men participation in it. And many of them are actually started by millennial men. So your question earlier is where does it start and where does it come? We have a really nice sandwiching. We have both of it. And it's made a huge difference because I do think sometimes if you're not invited in and you don't know what to do, it makes it really challenging. And the invitation has opened it up. We actually do very locally in New York City something called Spotlight where we bring some of our customers in. Executive women to talk to our group. So it's not just us talking to each other because that, you know, that gets old. And I made a joke in the last one. I said to the people coming, I said, just don't be concerned when you get. It'll probably be 50-50. And they were shocked. I won't tell you which institution they were from. But it's been very well received because it really is about progressing it forward with everybody. And so those are the internal initiatives. And then many of our external initiatives are the same. So Girls Who Code often are sponsored by men, and most of the participation there is also men. And so I feel really, really good about the male participation at MasterCard, but I think had we not invited people in, I don't think we would have gotten it because I don't think they knew what to do. They didn't want to be intrusive, but they wanted to help participate. I'm not a man, you can see that, but that's my perspective.
Romy, she just brought up the idea, I think, around maybe employee resource group or business resource group, whatever you call them in your organizations out there, but there are really a proliferation of these affinity groups broadly in the corporate world today. Is this a good place for male allies to get involved? And if so, what does that look like?
Yeah.
How does that work?
So I think it's essential. And again, I think, Jess, you're completely right. If we want to involve men in these groups, we have to help show them what that looks like and make them feel welcome because it can be intimidating to walk in and be the only man in a room full of women, just as it's intimidating to be the only woman in a room full of men. But I look at these employee resource groups, and actually, curious, show of hands, how many of you work at a company that has a women's employee resource group? Right. So they're everywhere. And they are really the first place that companies are investing money and human resources to help advance gender diversity. And unfortunately, I think right now there's a lot of room to make them more efficient, more productive, more collaborative, so that, you know, I would love to see a world where your MasterCard employee resource group works with your Bristol Myers Squibb employee, and yeah. Because how much stronger is it that way, right? But then if you believe, like I believe, that the advancement of gender diversity will drive better corporate performance, and you realize that all the women involved in these groups are doing it as extra volunteer work. They've already got a full plate at work. They've probably got a full plate at home. And now they're dedicating their extra hours to help diversify the company, which results in better business performance for the company. So that doesn't quite seem fair. And also, because as I mentioned earlier, the clout and budget and funding and executive support sits with men. So I think if we were going to make these groups really productive, they have to be gender diversity initiatives that are co-led by women and male allies, male sponsors. Both, not just, I think what happens right now is there's a lot of male sponsors who kind of just put their name on it or maybe show up at an event or two. But what we really need is men who are helping plan the initiative, set the goals, do the budgeting, ensure, drive metrics, drive real, real results out of these programs.
That's great. And Mary Beth, can we follow up on that with Bristol Myers Squibb? I know they have a unique model for your employee resource groups out there in gender parity. Can you tell us a little bit more about how that works?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think it's actually a huge competitive advantage, I would go so far as to say, for Bristol Myers. So about 3 years ago, the decision was taken to actually approach diversification and these employee-based resource groups in a much more deliberate way. To the extent, Romy, as an example, that full-time leadership positions were put in place to lead these initiatives.
It's incredible.
Right?
It's very rare.
It is very rare. And in fact, we have a number of these individuals in the audience today, right? And what they have been able to achieve, not only for the specific resource group that they lead, but across those resource groups, is truly extraordinary. Now, with respect to the involvement of men in this process, it was understood early on that if we only focused on one demographic, we were not going to get very far. It was critical that we engage our male partners in this discussion and in this journey, understanding that we had a long way to go, right? I mean, these are not turnkey events. I was speaking with a colleague last night about just how big of an undertaking this is. We're talking about deeply embedded cultural tendencies, right? The way people have grown up, where they've grown up, what they've been exposed to over the course of their lives. And here we are in the corporate setting trying to adjust that thinking. So utilizing many, many resources, again, about 3 years ago, our engaging men effort was taken off the ground. Over these past 3 years, much has been accomplished, right? Starting, right, if we think about the progression from, as David has indicated, right, moving from unawareness to awareness, right, and then ideally moving through not only awareness but acceptance that things must change, becoming an advocate, a champion, right, and then somebody who can truly affect very big outcomes. You know, my colleague over here, Adam Dubow, who is trying to hide himself on the side, right? Yep, doing a little eye thing over there right now. You know, he led this effort, right? Initiating a series of workshops that have now been held across functions throughout BMS. And again, you know, aim one was awareness, right? This is not one and done. Just tipping that point, right? Again, those inflection points, getting people to understand. Now how do we get them to take on the accountability of setting those metrics that we know are so important, right? Making commitments, measuring, and being very, very deliberate, choiceful about what we do. This has real-time importance to us as we prepare to create a new company with the acquisition of Celgene, another smaller pharmaceutical company. I will tell you, we have very direct, very candid conversations on diversity, including gender diversity. And I will also say that in the process, I tend to be pretty direct, okay? In the process of planning that organization, right, diversification is an absolute measure, all right? So that level of thoughtfulness, deliberateness, right, is, to me, essential if we're going to reverse the trend that we heard about earlier. 200 years is not acceptable.
Yeah. We're going to stop here and now open it up to questions from the audience. So there's microphones set up. There's one in the middle, and then there's two on the sides there. If you have questions you would like to address either to the entire panel or to specific people on the panel, and I'll let Jenity.
Sure. So first of all, let's give a round of applause to everyone for giving us some information. Thank you so much for all the insights you gave us. I did want to ask one question before we start getting questions from the audience. Can you each share a top strategy for identifying a male ally, and how can you kind of bring him onto your team?
That's a hard question. Identifying a male ally. I've never actually approached it that way, I think. I think I've approached more looking for people that I think can help me be a better person. Than who I am. Saying that, I've had the fortune of having many male allies. Maybe it was an unconscious bias by me because I was looking for someone that was different from me to learn from. But that's typically how I approach either allies or mentors or people who, especially at major points in my career, when I needed to lean on someone, I've found is how do I find someone who's going to help me be more than who I am?
Yeah, and similar. I've not approached it through that lens, but I think as I've gotten older, I'm looking for leaders. I am looking for deep, deep leaders, not the people who are the first to rush up to jump on the stage. I'm talking about the people who own, in a very deep sense, the outcomes, okay, of a team, the outcomes of individuals. That's what I look for now in terms of my peer support, but also how I am looking to grow that next generation of folks who will commit to creating a more diversified workforce.
Yeah, I would say my best male allies, and I've had a few, have been my manager. And I could tell they were genuinely an ally because, as for example, after I spent months doing like spreadsheet analysis, when the time came to present the analysis to the CEO, he brought me to do it instead of taking it and doing it himself. And whether it's male or female, those are the manager. You should have a boss like that. And if you don't, you should find a different boss. Because you want somebody who's supporting you in that way. But I think in particular in organizations that are male-heavy at the top, it helps for that person to be a male and be your male ally.
Great. So let's go ahead and open up the audience.
Thank you very much to all the panelists. My name is Tony Rodriguez, and I work at Bristol-Myers Squibb. I'm also a proud member of the Bristol Network of Women. And as a member within that PBR, People and Business Resource Group, and the other People and Business Resource Groups, what I wanted to find out from the panel is, as we come across these difficult situations, we have an opportunity to coach, and reverse mentor our senior leaders and our peers, because we have to hold each other accountable and we have to hold senior leadership accountable to drive the results which we desire to see. What is a specific situation that you've had, and how did you handle that coaching or mentoring opportunity? Thank you.
Yeah, so you seem to be looking at me.
All right, so we'll start. All right.
I want to just
make a story here.
Yeah, maybe there is.
So again, you know, this is a time for candor. And I do agree with the point that leadership has a profound responsibility in creating the workforce needed to deliver success. And diversification is part of that. I can tell you, I've had those direct conversations with our CEO, even as of quite recently, all right? And I will tell you, okay, looking at right eye to eye, right, he gets it, all right? But it is that level of assurance, I think, that is important, not only for me to see, but a whole lot of other people to see. So if he is there, okay, then absolutely I invite you to be engaging your colleagues, men and women, all right, to do their best. I know it's a hard conversation, but once you start having it, it gets a lot easier.
I'd say our CEO has been there, and he's been a major force for MasterCard. Even, like, it seems like very ridiculous things, but if we're speaking at something together and there's a high stool, he'll say things like, women don't like high stools, you need to get them chairs. Like, and it sounds ridiculous, but it's always rotating. He's always trying to figure out how there's equality at MasterCard, from the smallest things to the largest. The experience I gave before, where somebody who I very much like and I work for, who at the time was my boss and was doing things that I knew it was unconscious. It was an unconscious thing. And I had that conversation with them. That was my way of coaching up. I'm also very direct. And I'm not willing to work in an environment that I don't feel like I am equal in. That's a personal choice. So for me, it wasn't as high risk. And the receptivity to it was fabulous. It was, you know what, thank you. If you see it again, you need to tell me. Now, we also have a lot of culture diversity at MasterCard, so I'm not making excuses, but this person also isn't from the United States. And there's lots of sensitivities for people when you work in a multi-diverse company. And so that was my way of doing it. I feel fortunate where I am, but I think we all have to coach up on not just gender diversity, frankly, on all levels of diversity, mm-hmm. on a regular basis. I mean, that's how you are a good person, and that's how you're going to drive what you need to for your business.
Thank you. Let's go ahead and take the next question.
Hi, thanks so much for your insight. I was just wondering if you have any strategies for having conversations with male bosses about both advancement and maternity and parental leave.
Yeah, so I think that, and I experienced certainly when I had my kids, this sort of assumption, she doesn't want to advance now. She's going to be on pause. And I think it's, again, it's just being candid to say, hey, just want you to know, I'm super excited about this baby, but that doesn't mitigate my desire to have a really big career. And so I'm going to take my leave and I'm going to come back and I'm going to deliver for you. So let's level set on that and keep me in mind for new assignments when I come back. I actually have a crazy theory that I think about like 3 months after every woman comes back from maternity leave, she should get a new assignment or a promotion. Because I think that there's actually a moment of like flagging engagement. It's a really hard time. And I think if the work, when the work is more engaging or interesting, it helps kind of push that through.
Don't apologize for needing maternity leave. I have two children back 15 months apart, so they were back to back, and that was like the running joke. I would see people and they'd be like, you're still pregnant?
Yeah.
And I'd be like, nope, I'm on to number two. But I felt apologetic about it at the time. I remember it, and it's ridiculous. And I even have people now. I promoted someone recently who was newly pregnant, and they said, I'd love to take it, but I just need to let you know that I'm pregnant. And I'm like, that's awesome, but I don't know why it's relevant for this conversation. So I think making sure people know you're committed is important, but most people have children. It's in a lot of successful people with children.
The other thing I have to say is everyone feels like, oh my God, 3 months, if you're going to be out for 3 months, 3 months is such a long time. After I went out and came back, I came into meetings. I was like, we're still talking about this? Nothing advanced. 3 months is nothing. You won't miss anything.
Thank you. Yeah. Did you have a question over there?
Hi. I am involved with our Merck Women's Network Employee Resource Group, and I'm really proud that we have great male sponsorship and leaders that are allies, but where we kind of fall down a little bit is on actual male participation in the working group level. And we're trying to find a couple of key points in our like elevator speech when we have, you know, let's say folks in front of us at a table and the guys walk by and they think, well, this doesn't apply to me. And we haven't been able to kind of capture their attention and help them understand that not only do we want them there, but we need them. And so I'm just looking for any pointers on a couple of key points that we can get across in an elevator type pitch.
I think it's about appealing to how it advances their career. And I don't know how to say this in an elevator pitch, but effectively, if they can involve themselves, it's going to be a signature win for them. So I would definitely appeal to men, male allies, and say, come join us because this is an initiative that's going to have the eyes of the CEO on it. There's real opportunity for advancement, for visibility, et cetera.
And I think there's truth to that, right? You know, it just doesn't just yes. sound good, right? You know, one of the techniques that I think the BMS team has used, right, is they've leveraged the Be Now group, the network of women, and have asked them to invite, right, two male peers, right? You know, somebody to sit on either side of them, you know, as a talk is given, right? And again, as we envision that journey from a lack of awareness to engagement and so on, that's the first step, right? You need a strategy to follow, but that's step one.
One last soundbite on that is with the senior leaders in particular, the very top of your organization, if they can be vocal about and very clear about the purpose and why this is important to our organization and our mission, our purpose, right? And be very transparent about it. And the more they're talking about it, it obviously means it's something that's important to me, so therefore it ought to be important to you. And again, that, I think that helps with other men and going, oh, wait a minute, he's talking about it. I should be concerned about this too. And that means I got to be involved.
I think we have time for probably one more question.
Hi, this is a question for David. Perhaps the other women can also address it. But I spent 21 years in the military, so very goal-oriented organization, very hierarchical, hyper-masculine. And I'm just reflecting on younger women in any organization where the strategic leadership have not drunk the Kool-Aid yet, and there is limited economic mobility, particularly for the junior people. How do you protect them? How do you nurture them in that kind of environment? Any ideas?
Yeah, at first, it's great to have one of our fellow sisters in arms out here today, and my wife, by the way, is a vet, retired officer as well, and much of that is what inspired me in a lot of my work that I do today, is seeing that and seeing the young junior women that I worked with as well. And you know, one of the things, and which is also why my co-author Brad Johnson and I, we started when we thought about how do we level the playing field and really nurture, as you said, these people, is looking at the professional development piece, right? We were talking about this earlier. We spend so much time, effort, energy, and money in recruiting talented people into our organization, and then they get there, and then suddenly this, we just turn off the investment, and the professional development piece is important, right? To retain and to advance and to really develop them along the way, we've got to invest in them. And part of that's mentoring and sponsoring, right? And understanding how we all have a role in that in some way or another. And I think that's a great place from a leadership perspective for all of us to think about, all right, so how do I do this? And how can I be better at it? And how can I identify this talent that's out there and help, one, make them feel like they belong and make them recognize that they belong here and that there's a future for them in this organization. And I think great mentoring helps do that.
So unfortunately, we are out of time, but one more round of applause for our speakers. Just so you know, David will be signing his book after this session in the exhibit hall. And enjoy the rest of your evenings. Thank you so much.
Thank you.